Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
There is a story for everyone here, because every story matters. Welcome everyone to the Storybox. This is the place to be if you are a lover of stories, learning new and interesting things, and if you want to grow abundantly. My name is Jay Phantom, and I believe it's my purpose to help you realize your worth and become the greatest and best version of you possible. I am grateful that you're here today. Now let's journey into the story box together and hear more about whose story will be unboxed today. How many of you, like me, can put up your hand and say, Jay, I love Whitney Houston's music? Well, my guest today brought people to their feet. He moved their souls and literally their minds when he auditioned for America's Got Talent, and he sung one of Whitney Houston's classics and literally blew everyone away. It really was awe-inspiring, and I highly encourage you to go and watch that video. He sung the song flawlessly. I'm not kidding. Go and watch it after you've listened to this conversation, that is. But my guest today is Johnny Manuel. Now, Johnny is a great human being, very down to earth. And we had a great conversation today, as you're about to listen to. But Johnny is a Michigan-born, Sydney-based pop act who has captivated audiences around the world with his show-stopping voice. He enters a new era with the release of his new single, Lost in the Music. As a child, Johnny couldn't be pulled away from the radio as soon as he discovered the joy of performance and his incredible music manship. In the church choir. He has been a prolific performer ever since appearing on The Voice Australia. I'm sure some of you, if you watch the show, would recognize him there, and America's Got Talent and Eurovision as well. All the while honing his skills and building an international fan base. People love this guy. He's now defining his own artistic vision. Johnny is writing and recording music that is true to his lifelong commitment and to his craft, alongside producer Michael Fatkin and writer David Ryan Harris. Johnny's new sound captures his personality and broadcasts it as slick, upbeat, and pop. Lost in the Music embodies the highs and lows of lovers in turmoil. While the song was originally inspired by a romantic relationship, Johnny began to discover meaningful parallels with his career in the relationship with music, rather than getting caught up in the industry and letting his passion fade. Now, my friends, if you do get something from this conversation, I have no doubt that you will, please share it around to your friends and family. Show some love to Johnny by sharing this incredible conversation on your social media platform. Also, before you go, don't forget to subscribe and leave a 5-star rating and review over on Apple Podcast. All right, my friends, you know what time it is. It is time to walk into the story box today and listen to the incredible story of how Johnny Manuel became an international sensation.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. This is great.
It's always good, man, having singers, songwriters, artists on the show. I love speaking to people like yourself, because you probably had an incredible journey by the sound of it, just from the bio I read out.
Yeah, it's been a long journey, right? But I've had some pretty high highs. So I'm very happy about it.
No doubt, man. I mean, you're Whitney Houston's I Have Nothing. That video got well over 24.5 million views, which is honestly stellar stuff. You had probably hundreds of thousands of people watching you on The Voice as well. You had Australia cheering for you. You had America cheering. You had the whole world, man, cheering for you. Do you ever pinch yourself, man?
Yeah, every day, actually. Just because I've just been able to do what I love for so long. And I know that it's a very I don't know, it's a special thing that I'm able to do, and I'm very, very grateful for it, because there's plenty of people out there that, you know, want to do what I'm doing or want to be doing whatever it is that's truly in their hearts and they're just unable to do it. And I'm just very, very grateful. Yeah.
Man, I'm curious. This is a question I normally ask everyone at the beginning, but I'm even more fascinated by you because you've had a lot of high highs. What does success look like for you?
Oh man, you know, it's evolved over the years, right? And so now success for me is just being able to sing and reach as many people as possible with my voice, because I truly feel in my heart that that's what I was put here for. And so, yeah, for me, as long as I'm continuing to do what I love and reaching as many people as possible, that's success.
Why do you think your version of success has evolved for you over time?
I think it's just an attitude of like, keep going, right? That's always been my mantra, no matter what happens. Like I said before, I've had some very high highs, but I've also had some pretty low lows. and during those times, it was just important for me to just keep going. Even if I couldn't see what the next step was or how to go about it, was just taking it in the dark, you know?
So talk to me about those low lows. How did they come about?
Yeah, you know, it's all been music-based, thankfully. Nothing in my personal life has ever been too low, which is great. But in my career, it's just, the music industry is tough. I guess it's like any industry, right? But I'm in the music industry, so I can only speak about what I know. But it's been tough for me, like throughout the years. Like you said, I was signed as a kid. I was only 14 when I got my first contract. And there was a lot that came along with that. I worked with some really great, amazing, super popular producers in the United States, like Sean Puffy Combs and Jermaine Dupri. And I toured with NSYNC and Jessica Simpson. And, you know, and then I went on to perform with David Foster and all these people. And it would always be this thing of like, I would get to where I thought it was about to break for me. And then something would happen, whether it was people not seeing eye to eye or management not agreeing with the record company or just, you know, just so many different factors that go into it. And a couple of times I found myself back in Michigan living with my parents, actually, after I'd gone on and done these incredible things. And then it was just sort of like, you know, I was living in LA. And then I moved to New York and I was like, I couldn't find my place anymore. So I went back to Michigan to sort of retreat. But it was good ultimately because I did a lot of soul searching, and that's when I started getting into meditation and creative visualization and sort of just focusing on the positive things and being grateful for what I did have.
So tell me about, okay, so you've obviously, right, like you're about to, you think that you're about to make it, and then all of a sudden it doesn't really work out the way you thought it would. First question coming from that, why in the world did that happen? I mean, you've reached so far, then all of a sudden it's kind of like your feet have been pulled out from under you just before you get it. And then my second question is, because of that, how did it make you feel?
Yeah, it definitely. So to answer the first part of your question, I think there were a myriad of reasons. Like there's a bunch of different things that happened, right? As I mentioned before, like sometimes it was management that just couldn't see eye to eye, or sometimes I was with a record company and they just couldn't see where I fit into the music industry at that moment in time. And so, you know, for whatever reason, it just would, it felt like it was slipping through my hands repeatedly. And I kept saying to myself, because you hear people say it all the time, opportunities like this don't, they only come around once in a lifetime. And I felt like I was granted so many different opportunities. And then I just got to the point where it made me feel, to address the second part of your question, it started to make me feel like maybe I didn't have what it took, or maybe there was something that I was doing that was causing, you know, these near success stories to sort of slip through my fingers. And it weighs, right? It weighs heavily on your self-esteem and on you as a person. I started to question everything, my character and just like, you know, whether I really had enough talent to make it anymore, and whether or not my time had just passed and I saw everything that I was going to see.
Mm. Yeah. So how did you, what specifically did you believe is your purpose before all that compared to after?
Yeah, before all everything happened, I didn't, because I was so young, right? I just knew that I loved to sing. And I grew up in a very musical family. My parents, we had a studio in our house, and my parents had a singing group. And so I knew all the local like DJs, and we would always be going to the radio stations as my parents were doing interviews. And they did small like regional tours and stuff like that. So I just knew that I loved being around it. And then when I was old enough to actually start using my voice, I realized, hey, I really, really love this. Like nothing else gave me the feeling that singing gave me and still gives me to this day. It's just, I could do it for hours locked in a room by myself. It's just what I love to do, right? And so for me, you know, that's how it started. And then I started singing in church as I got older and started seeing people's reactions to me singing at church. And then it started to sort of connect with me as like, oh, when I sing, it makes people feel a certain way. And then people will come to me and say, I was having a bad day and I heard you sing and it changed, it lifted my spirit. And then I thought, oh, okay, so this is part of my purpose. And then as I grew older and as I started to develop my voice more, I realized I have to learn how to focus this. And when I'm singing now, that's what I think about. I think about helping people. And I know that sounds like so esoteric and like heady and strange, but that's where I go in my head, because I'm also an extremely shy person and I have stage fright, very bad stage fright. So in order for me sometimes to get out on the stage, I have to think about the reason I'm doing it. It has nothing to do with me. I'm here to deliver a gift to other people and I'm here to help other people. And so, yeah, that's sort of how it developed.
Man, it sounds like we have similar purposes, because I believe the same thing with what I do with this. And speaking to you today, it's using stories to help people. You're using your music to help people. And then I think you're right. The moment we make it about ourselves, we kind of get stuck. We start, the fear kind of creeps in. And it's always interesting how that happens. But the moment we take ourselves out of the equation, we make it about others. Just the amazing things that come from it.
It's 100% right. Yeah. It's an amazing feeling, right? It's good to know that you can go past your own insecurities when you know that you're there for a higher purpose. It's great.
100%, man. And it's interesting you should say that, because you've been on the stage many, many times and you've had literally the world watching you. And I've never had any pressure like that before in my life. So how do you deal with the pressure? Like, is it the same thing with you going back to, okay, I am just taking myself out of the equation, or is there something more? Because you mentioned meditation as well earlier.
Yeah, I definitely start every morning with meditation. And then right after I'm done with my meditation, I go into writing down things that I'm grateful for. I just make a list, whatever I can think of in my head. And, you know, that's sometimes it takes collectively 10 minutes if that's all I have that day. Or sometimes I'll do it a little bit later if the morning starts too early. But yeah, I definitely take the time to do that every day. But for me, it's actually gotten progressively worse as far as my stage fright is concerned. It just, like I said before, insecurities, they start to pile up and you start to feel like, oh, I'm not worth it, or I'm not worthy, or maybe people don't really want to hear what I have to say, or they don't want my voice anymore. Like even on The Voice, just this past year here in Australia, I sought out performance coaches and just people to sort of help me to talk me through the process of before going on stage. And so I ended up getting, my friend sent me a podcast of these people talking about this exact thing. And there was a violinist that they were trying to help who had extreme stage fright. And they said the night before, it was really important to turn off your phone a few hours before you go to sleep and watch something extremely funny, and then read a book or something uplifting before you go to bed, so that your mindset going into sleep, when you wake up the next day, you've already got a head start. So I started to do just like little things like that, because like you said, with The Voice or America's Got Talent or Eurovision, you know, there's so many people watching and you just don't want to drop the ball, right? So it was very important for me to be in the right mind space during that time.
So the more you do it, it's interesting how you mentioned the stage fright kind of gets worse the more you do it. I thought it would be the complete opposite. So you're sort of getting comfortable with being on the stage, but that's a fascinating line of thought. So where does your confidence come from?
now it comes from, like I touched on before, just knowing that even if it's just one person that I'm reaching, somebody is going to be reached. And for me, that's enough. And it's what sort of gets me by. But also, I think the stage fright has increased for me because I've moved a lot. And for me, like, I'm a creature of habit. And so when I'm in new environments and new spaces, which I'm forced to be because of my career, sometimes it sends me into a spiral. And then you'll find me in a corner somewhere by myself and everyone's like, are you all right? And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm fine. You know, it's just, it's going to take me a minute to adjust. And so when you're doing something like The Voice and there's, you know, I moved to Australia in January last year and I traveled here for years, but I just moved here last year, January. And so it's all new people. And then, you know, these people are highly, highly successful, right? These producers that are on the shows and all the other people that work, the cameramen and everyone, they're so skilled at what they do. And so I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't letting anyone down and that I was bringing the best of myself every single time I performed as well. And so I think just the pressure of that sort of played into my stage fright a bit. Mm. Yeah.
Now, it's also interesting because I'm always curious about if you don't win The Voice, do you still have opportunities that come from that?
Yeah.
Did you find that for yourself?
Yeah, I actually found, so all the songs that I've recorded that I will be releasing throughout this year have been produced by Michael Fatkin, who is the producer that I met through The Voice. He was he produced my winner single for The Voice. And my current manager is someone who was working on The Voice and we met during the process. And if it weren't for those two people, I probably wouldn't be sitting here talking to you right now. So I'm extremely grateful for the experience of The Voice and what happened after. Even during COVID, I was able to, you know, record music and then get out and perform a bit. Here in Australia, we've been very lucky with that. And so, yeah, because I remember coming off America's Got Talent and I got booked for a lot of corporate gigs and all of them wanted me to just sing the songs that I sung on the show, right? But no one was interested in letting me sing original music. And so I knew that I didn't want to make that same mistake this time. And so I wanted to make sure that I had original material ready to go once the show was over, win or lose. Yeah. Mm.
So talk to me about your creative process with creating music, coming up with original songs, because I can only have a guess that it's not easy. Or does it come easy for you?
Sometimes it's easy and sometimes it's very difficult. It just depends on how vulnerable you want to be, what headspace you're in. And like creating Lost in the Music came pretty easily. Like Michael came to my apartment. I was living in Terrigal at the time. And he came over and we just sat around my place and listened to music. And that's how we started. We just turned on Spotify and let playlists go. And then sort of to use that as inspiration. And then we brought David Ryan Harrison, who is an incredible musician and songwriter and human being. He's just amazing. And he came in and he was like, oh, I've been playing this groove on my bass. And so what do you guys think of this? And I'm like, yeah. And then it makes me feel like, you know, blah. And it made me start thinking about relationships and how when you first meet someone, it's the honeymoon phase, right? And you go through this process of like being so infatuated with the person. And then as time goes on, you have to work a little bit harder to keep that love, that same spark alive, right? And so that's been my relationship with music as well. And I started to notice the parallels and I had to find my way back to my original love, which is music. And we put it in song and that's how Lost in the Music came about.
Mm. That's a pretty incredible story, man. So like, I'm always fascinated by, was there any challenge for you coming up with Lost in the Music at all? Like actually coming up with the words, did you struggle or did it just flow straight out?
No, that particular song flowed. Actually, all the songs that we have coming out for the rest of this year, they just sort of came out. It was like a natural flow that we had and it was good. But I have definitely had times in the past where it took 2 or 3 weeks to write a verse of a song. And it was just because emotionally, you have to be very vulnerable. And I think the more honest you are, the more vulnerable you are, the more people you touch. But sometimes it's hard. You want to hold on to your stories. You want to keep some mystery there. And so you don't want to say everything you feel in your heart. And so those times it's a little bit harder. Sometimes you just cannot get the right feel for it. And it just never feels like you're there until there's this moment and there's a spark. So,
Speaking about all your other songs that you, I believe, are yet to release, or the ones that you've done, which one would you say that you're the most proud of?
Oh, right. There's a song called Irreplaceable that we wrote. I wrote it with a guy named Jonas Marin, and he's in LA, but he's from Sweden, and Michael Facken produced it. And that's a pretty special one, I think. It's a ballad, and I think it's more of what people would expect for me to sing after seeing me on the television shows. It's definitely a big love ballad. And I'm just proud of it because I was really vulnerable and open about the love that I feel for my partner. And yeah, it's good.
Do you feel like anything is missing currently in your life?
No. The only thing that I wish were different is that my parents are in the United States. And they were supposed to come here in April last year, and then COVID happened. I talk to them every day on FaceTime. And my brother, who's my best friend, he was supposed to come as well. And so not being able to be with my family as I'm going through, I found some really great people here in Australia. And it seems like I'm starting to fumble into some happiness and good success here in my career. And so I love them being a part of it. And so I guess that would be the one thing. Yeah.
Was it hard for you to actually leave the States and live here?
No. No, it was not hard. I love the US and in particular Los Angeles, which is where I call home now. I have for years. But I traveled to Australia several times and I just saw how easy life is here. And for me, it's interesting because people are friendlier, but they're more direct here in Australia. And that's a good combination for me. I really enjoy that. And then it's just so beautiful, right? It's a huge country, but so much of it is uninhibited. And I love it here. I love the people. I love the energy. And people ask me all the time, do you miss the US? Do you miss it? And I said, no, not yet. I haven't missed it yet.
Mm. So talk to me about, this is more of a fun question. What has been the weirdest food combination you've ever tried, either here in Australia or in America?
Food combination. I'm a vegan of 18 years. So for me, it's like, it's pretty like every day. Like I said before, I'm a creature of habit. So it's every day the same thing. I remember though, one time when I was in LA, we went to dinner with some record executive and they took us to some fancy restaurant and everyone was eating and I was eating and I was like, what is this? And we were eating alligator.
Right.
And so that was the weirdest thing. And then after I realized that's what I was eating was one of the reasons I went vegan. No, I'm kidding.
I don't blame you at all. I wouldn't even want to touch crocodile or, it's interesting, right? Because they have kangaroo, you can eat that. And I'm just like, I can't match up eating a national symbol, even though they call it a pest in Australia. I just can't match up in my brain eating it.
It's a strange thing, right? I could never eat kangaroo, but I didn't know it was a thing here. I didn't know that people actually did eat kangaroo here until I went to dinner and they were having a conversation about it. And I was like, what?
Yeah. It's a strange thing. I don't know why they do it, but they do it. I mean, good luck to them. And, but I'm curious about for yourself that you mentioned that you are vegan. What was the personal choice for you to go vegan?
Yeah, I was having really bad health issues, like really bad headaches all the time. My skin was terrible. And I was 19 or in my early 20s when I first started to toy with the idea of going vegan. And a friend of mine had grown up part vegetarian, like her and her family are vegetarian 4 days a week and vegan three or something like that. And she was like, oh, come hang out with me in Orange County. My family, my parents will cook for us all weekend and we'll just hang out. And I'm like, okay, cool. And I immediately felt a change. Like I felt lighter. I was able to sleep through the night, which I hadn't been able to do for a really long time. And I didn't have a headache for like 3 days straight. And I was like, oh, maybe there's something to this. And so she said, well, just try it for a couple more weeks or whatever and see how you feel. And then I did. And then I said to her, I think I'm going to go for a month. And so then we started making challenges. And then I just sort of never turned back because I just felt great. My skin started to clear up and my health complications went away. And for me, it works. So
yeah. It's a major difference when you do have a diet change and you start to understand how important food really is to one's overall health. And because I know I've been there, I haven't gone vegan. I've gone more, you know, health conscious, organic. I have what they call, I call the freedom diet. So it's more or less like I get to pick what I eat, but I'm not going to blame anyone for eating the wrong kinds of food. So I'm always conscious eating the right kinds of food, the amount, that sort of thing. But it's freedom for me. It's like not specific to, okay, I'm going to be, you know, vegan, I'm going to be keto, I'm going to be this and that. No.
Right. And I tell people all the time I'm an accidental vegan. Like I didn't even realize that I was transitioning to that when I was doing it. I just thought, oh, I'm eating these foods and they make me feel better, so I'll keep eating these foods. And now I'm afraid because one time I accidentally had chicken, or I think it was pork actually, in like a bowl. And I was sick for like 3 days. And I was like, well, clearly my body is not going to tolerate this anymore. But I like your approach. That's good. The freedom diet.
You've been eating a certain way for a number of years. Your body's gotten used to it. It's adjusted to it. So, of course, having a foreign food and adding that to your system, even just once, you can notice a major difference to your overall health.
That's right.
So, curious thing, man. Couple more questions for you, if you don't mind. So when a moment for you in your life that you least expected to happen gave you a renewed perspective, which event or moment for you?
Right. That is such a good question. I guess a highlight for me was, again, it was me on stage, but I performed and it was in Muhammad Ali's later years of his life. He was definitely suffering. I was actually performing at a charity event for Parkinson's disease. And we'd all been told, like everyone before he came in, that like he wasn't feeling well that day. He was going to be sitting the whole time. And I got up and I sang. And near the middle of my performance, he just stood up and started clapping. And so for me, that was like life-changing. It was even hard for me to finish the performance because, you know, it's like I also really looked up to Muhammad Ali for years. And so to see him doing that, and for, I think because they prefaced the night with he's going to be sitting all day, he's not having a good day, and he felt compelled to stand up. For me, I was like, this reaffirms that I'm definitely here to be doing this. Because obviously maybe I helped him out in his day and I got to meet him after. It was really, really great. And he was a kind person. And I didn't expect that. So
that's a great story, man. I love that story, especially because it had Muhammad Ali in it, that you were able to get the champ to stand. I mean, that's powerful, dude. Like, did you get a photo with him?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
And his daughter that was with him that night. And yeah, it was good.
That's insane, man. Well, my final question for you, this is my all-time favorite question I ask all my guests at the very end. It's a hypothetical one, so I want you to imagine with me for a moment that you've been able to reach the age of 100. All your friends and your family have decided to put together a film for you of everything you've ever said and everything you've ever done. Don't ask me how in the world they got it all. We'll call it magic for the sake of argument. But they've been able to get it. I know. They've been able to get it and show it to you on your 100th birthday. What do you want that film to say and to show about your life?
Oh, that is a fantastic question. I would like for there hopefully to be many, many testimonials of people's lives that I've changed throughout the years for the better. People that I've encouraged or given hope to or inspired in some way. And I hope to leave a legacy of love and empowerment behind for sure. So that would be great. And then hopefully there's some performance highlights in there.
I have no doubt there will be, man. Where can people listen to your new song, man, and download it and learn more about you?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's on all streaming platforms. So Spotify, Apple, Amazon Music, whatever your YouTube, whatever your preference is. And then you can keep track of and updated on what I'm doing on my Instagram. It's just at Johnny Manuel is my handle, or my website, which is johnnymanuel.com.au.
You got a pretty cool last name, man.
Thank you.
Oh, man, it's a great song. Love your work. Thank you so much for taking the time to be here today, for sharing your story, your advice, and your creative spark as well. I think people are going to resonate with you and what you've been through as well. So thank you for coming on the Storybox podcast, man.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. This is a pleasure.
I really don't like this part because it means that sadly we have come to an end of yet another story. I just want to say thank you to all of you for tuning in and listening to our guest today. It is my prayer that you would have felt inspired, motivated, challenged in some way, and that you would have learned something new as well. If you would like to hear more amazing stories like this one, you can do so now by searching up the Storybox on all podcast platforms. It is that easy. And if you did get something from today's guest, please do share it around with your friend or family member who you feel could benefit from hearing today's story. And before you go, I greatly appreciate it if you could spend 30 seconds leaving a rating review over on Apple Podcasts. It goes a long way to reaching more people and building this community of the Storybox. Let's start changing lives through powerful stories like this one you heard today. Your support is always greatly appreciated. Until next time, when we dive back into the Storybox, I'm Jay Phantom. And don't forget, your story is worth more than you know. I'll catch you then.